I promise I will explain the hat at some point today. Tighten up a little bit. Well, before he became... Sound? Are we good? How's that? Is that better? Okay, let me know. Never hesitate to let me know. Before he became a storytelling rabbi, Jesus worked as what the Greeks called a tekton, which means a builder in stone and wood. But some people have pointed out a problem with this bit of history. If Jesus was a builder, a carpenter, or a woodworker, how come we don't find any references to that kind of work in his speech? We would expect at least a few comments on living lives that are upright, the way houses and furniture need to be, on keeping ourselves on the level, plumb, and square. We'd expect some comments about using well-seasoned wood that won't warp or crack, or about working with the human grain, or at least having good reasons if we sometimes have to work against it. We'd expect a stack of such wood-related comments, or at least a bundle, but all we can find is one log and one splinter. Why do you see the splinter that's in your brother's eye, but do not notice the log that's in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, "Let me take the splinter out of your eye," when there's a log in your own eye? You hypocrite, first take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take the splinter out of your brother's eye. I suspect, and I hope I don't offend anyone with this, but that these words are not original to Jesus. They have a proverbial feel, don't they? Such observations are the stuff of proverbs around the world. And here's one from Japan. We see the 7 shortcomings of others, but overlook 10 of our own. And there's this one from Indonesia, which I really like. We don't notice the elephant on our own eyelid, but can spot an ant on the other side of the sea. I like this Indonesian example for the way that it almost whistles in wonder at how finely and adjusted and powerful this tendency of ours can be. Sometimes it's amazing how we see the ant but miss the elephant. Count the 7 while overlooking 10. Reach for the splinter while ignoring the log. I see this or that in you and your actions, but when it comes to me, that's another story. It's not always easy to see ourselves when we scrutinize others, to look both ways when we cross the roads that we share. I'll share some more about that in a minute. First, let's turn our attention to Deborah as she plays.
Thank you.
you, Deborah. Thank you. That's a challenge.
It was.
Henry Mancini didn't make them easy. He made them pleasing. So you all know that song, the name of the song? The Baby Elephant Walk. Yeah, this might be a little bit of a generational thing. People who were kids or young adults back in 64, I think. Baby Elephant Walk from the movie Hatari. Well, I forgot to say Happy New Year when I did my reading. Happy New Year!
Happy New Year!
How's 2019 been going so far? We're just 6 days into it, but as everyone knows, sometimes a lot can happen even in a single day. Sometimes much, much more than we would wish for. 10 years ago today, well, 10 years ago, not today, but 10 years ago, on New Year's Day, January 1st, 2009, I was hit by a car while on my morning walk, just 6 hours into the new year. I thought of talking about it in my New Year's sermon that year, but then I thought better of it, since after all, I'd walked home uninjured from my brush with a car. So I put the idea on the shelf, thinking, what's the big deal? So many people get clobbered by a log or worse every day, every year. All I got amounted to little more than a splinter. But as we just heard in our quick tour of world proverbs, a splinter is at least as likely to occupy our attention as a log. And something about this one felt like it had gotten under my fingernail, as sometimes used to happen when I was a tecton doing woodwork. And something about how and where I got hit by a car on New Year's Day 2009 and what happened afterwards has remained under my fingernail ever since walking downtown at 5:30 in the morning that day to make a bank deposit. It was still quite dark, and I'd taken the precaution of wearing this very understated hat. It's pretty hard to miss, even in the dark. At 6 in the morning, I was on my way home from the bank, ready to cross one of Salem's most brightly lit intersections, right in front of the big downtown conference center. I had the green light and the walk signal in my favor, in addition to the hat. But as I stepped off the curb, a car quickly rounded the corner and grazed me, knocking me backwards and almost off my feet. Under the bright streetlights, I could see the driver's face looking right at mine. I shouted, "You hit me!" just in case she didn't know that she had. So I thought she'd roll down the window. I'd say something about being more careful, in a softer voice, of course, and she'd say sorry, and that would be that. But instead, she looked away and hit the accelerator. "What?" I shouted again. "You're driving away?" Sort of a silly thing to shout, since of course that's what she was doing. I shouted some more. I shouted out her license number, which I could read clearly because it was so well lit. I shouted it several times. I shouted so she could hear it, that I'd seen it. I shouted it so that I wouldn't forget it. I shouted until I got hoarse. The driver didn't stop driving. I didn't stop shouting till I got across the street, which took me almost right to the police station. I made a report, giving the police the license number and making sure that the person taking the report got a good look at this hat. I was very calm by that time, feeling that I was doing just the right thing. I didn't speak with any anger, but I did say, "That driver needs a wake-up call." They asked if I was injured, and I said no. I went home and told my family what had happened. And now I was noticing that my hips were very, very sore, as if they'd taken most of the pressure from the car. I was sorry I'd said I wasn't hurt at the police station. My insurance folks might be suspicious if I now claimed that I did need medical treatment after first telling the cops that I was fine. About a half hour later, I got a call from a police officer who said that the driver had called the station and voluntarily reported the incident. "Good," I said. "That's the most important thing, that she was taking responsibility now." I sound like a good minister. The cop said, "We can have her call you if you want to exchange information for insurance." "No," I said then, just so she's owning up. That's what counts. I was feeling really pretty noble, ready to let the sore hips go since obviously nothing was broken. And then the officer said, "She says she drove off because you were screaming." Screaming? Ida said shouting, yelling, hollering maybe, but not screaming. And not until after she started driving away, after looking at my face and hearing me say that she'd hit me. The officer didn't have much to say except, "Well, we do caution women not to get out of the car in such situations." I thanked him and hung up. I told my wife, Pam, what he'd said, and she wondered out loud if the driver would ever have called the police at all if I hadn't shouted out her license number to let her know that I had it. Maybe not. Probably not. I'm already feeling a little less generous here. But now that was the least of what concerned me. I was more upset now than when I'd first gotten hit. Something seemed really wrong, and I think I can say what it is. What bothered me about the word screaming that goes beyond any boy's discomfort, and someone might accuse him of screaming like a girl. Gosh, even after being hit by a car. Still, people who have been hurt do sometimes holler or even scream. That's because of the pain, the shock, and the fear. I don't think that the police really advise anyone to drive away when someone screams at you after you hit them with your car. Keep the door closed, sure, but don't drive away. Anyway, I'm a boy, and I hadn't screamed, I had yelled. I had shouted in anger. Hollered like heck, yeah, for sure. And now for sure I could tell that the driver who had hit me with her car had in some way, in her own mind, become the victim in this incident. A few years back, Jonathan Haidt wrote a book called The Happiness Hypothesis. It was marketed as a self-help book, which I usually avoid like the plague. Such books often seem to encourage people to put too many eggs in one flimsy basket. We can solve all our problems by looking at the birth order in our families or determining if we're left-brained or right-brained. We're urged to find our inner light, our inner child, our inner whatever. Such books come and they go, and I can see Suea remembering when all the ministers were talking about left and right brains. Remember that? They come and they go. Everyone's excited by them for a while until in due course they are remaindered and ultimately forgotten. You can read more about this in my forthcoming book, How to Help Yourself Without Self-Help Books. $29.95 hardcover from Bacon Press. But Haidt's book offers some observations on human behavior that are well worth taking to heart. In a chapter called The Faults of Others, he quotes the Japanese proverb that I shared earlier, "We see the seven shortcomings of others, but overlook 10 of our own," and adds another earthy one from Nigeria. I love this one. "A he-goat doesn't realize that he smells." When others do wrong, we're ready to call up our inner judge. When the wrongful action is our own, we are just as quick to place a quick call to what Haidt calls our inner lawyer. He says, "One of the reasons people are often contemptuous of lawyers is that they fight for a client's interest and not the truth. Although many lawyers won't tell a direct lie, most will do what they can to hide inconvenient facts while weaving a plausible alternative story for the judge and the jury, a story that they sometimes know is not true. Our inner lawyer works in the same way, but somehow we actually believe the stories he makes up. To understand his ways, we must catch him in action. We must observe him carrying out low-pressure as well as high-pressure assignments." I like that. I think that the driver who hit me with her car had pleaded her defense with the cop on the phone after first rehearsing it with the inner lawyer in her head. To justify first hitting someone with your car, then driving away without offering assistance, apology, or even acknowledgement, I'd say that's a pretty high-pressure assignment. It's very hard to see ourselves as others see us. But let me make a guess about how the driver saw me before she called up her inner lawyer first thing in the morning on the first day of the new year. I'm guessing that she hadn't expected to see me walking because she didn't expect to see anyone walking because she never walks anywhere herself anymore except to reach her car. True of so many American adults. In spite of my bright fluorescent ridge hat, she didn't see me at all. It's as if I'd been invisible and suddenly appeared out of nowhere just to terrify her. And this hat on top of my head, above my bearded face. What did she see when she saw that? Someone grizzled, bristly, not fine-featured or young. Who wears a hat like that? A poor fit, bright green, big letters with no obvious meaning. Probably a poor person. Maybe homeless or mentally ill. Someone who doesn't know anyone, whom nobody would miss. The kind of person you find walking, for God's sake, first thing in the morning downtown before it's even light. You pass lots of them just a few blocks north by the homeless shelter, milling around waiting for breakfast. So here's one shouting, screaming, you can say, and I will say it. It's me who's in real danger. A real person, a driver, an employee with some place to go, a citizen. Help! A crazy homeless man is screaming at me, just letters and numbers without any meaning. Help! But let me step over to her defense team for a moment. She might not have realized at first that I was shouting her license number. I might not get it either if someone shouted mine at me. Though I might understand if I just hit that person with my car. That nearly happened a few years later. I was driving down State Street in Salem in the leftmost lane, thinking through what I would say at the memorial service for a young man who died in his 20s. At the rear of the Capitol building, Barbara, you know that crosswalk? Oh, she just walked out. Yeah, the crosswalk behind the Capitol building on State Street. It's there in the middle of the block. It's not at an intersection. My inner lawyer would say that I was not exactly distracted, but I was not fully engaged either. At any rate, I didn't notice that the cars to the right of me were slowing and not or stopping. My mind was on that poor young guy, dead of a blood cancer, 24. So I just sailed through the crosswalk. And then I saw the pedestrian in the same corner of my eye where you might find a log or a splinter. I didn't hit him or even get that close. He was still a lane away from where I'd driven through, but to tell the truth and not just make a case for myself, I did not see him. Or notice the cars stopping mid-block because I did not expect to. I could easily have hit, injured, or even killed him. And as I realized that, my inner lawyer went into action. The vehicle to my right was a big SUV with dark tinted windows. Several of the other vehicles were also just like that. How can I see past those elephants in my little ant of a car? It used to be the cars were lower to the ground. There were no tinted windows. You learn to navigate by looking through the windows of those around you to take in the total picture. That's how I learned to drive, and that's how it should still be, etc., etc., etc. Just what the man's family would love to hear me say in court if he'd lost his life. Yet my inner lawyer had logged on and gone to work just as if that pedestrian had put my life in danger, as if I was the victim. You don't have to be a legal or religious genius to see how. If I had hit him, my life, the life I'm living now, would have come to an end. How could I go on as the father, the husband, the minister, the person that I've been? What pleasure could I take in the things that please me now, in the persons, the work, the activities that give my life its meaning. I started talking this morning about how much life can change in a single day, but it can happen in a single instant. It can change so much that it's hardly the same life at all. I think we all know this on some level, but we put it out of our minds. I think the woman who hit me with her car was afraid of losing her life. Life as she knows it and holds it dear, and that my shouting had just increased her fear. My own near miss as a driver gave me some closure for what had happened on that New Year's morning. I gained new understanding and compassion. I sound like I read a self-book, didn't I? Talking about closure. Self-help. I gained new understanding and compassion for that other driver when I saw my inner lawyer log on for action in my interest. In my interest, but not for the truth. I got a clear glimpse, you could say, of the log in my eye or the elephant on my eyelid. But I still don't regret shouting. I didn't scream. UU ministers aren't usually shouters. We leave that to the fundamentalists and Fox News. If you look on the back of your order of service, you'll see that our first principle is respect for the inherent worth and dignity of every person. What does that have to do with shouting? Sometimes you do have to raise your voice to get people's attention when it seems they've taken no notice of you at all, or of the others with whom they share the road, the sidewalk, the spaces that are common to us all. The commons. I love that word. Tom Hartman used to use that word. The commons. I prefer gentle interactions whenever they are possible. I love peace and quiet, but respect for the inherent worth and dignity of every person is a principle that's worth shouting for sometimes. Now, I don't need to tell you that the loudest voices we hear are often shouting for just the opposite, shouting against the worth and dignity of gay people, immigrants, non-English speakers, non-Christians, non-whites. At the same time, they make it sound like they're the victims, like they're the ones who are under siege. We're the real victims here. Maybe they think they really are. Gotta build that wall for me, no matter what the cost to everyone. I thought that I would end this sermon by inviting you to give your inner lawyer a sabbatical this year, because I'm sure that he works as hard as mine. But instead, I'd like to invite you to give her something worth representing. If it's something like that first principle or the second or any of the seven, I bet he'll take the case pro bono. That's short for pro bono publico, for the public good. I hope that's good enough for your inner lawyer and even better for her client. On New Year's Eve, I hope you shouted Happy New Year. Shouted it, Happy New Year, for this new cycle of days that we all share in common. Happy New Year. Happy New Year. Don't get hit by a car. And don't hit anyone with yours. May you go and come in peace this year wherever you work or play or simply travel. Watch out for splinters. Watch out for logs. And don't get squished by your elephant while staring at other people's ants. Across the street or across the sea. Look both ways when you cross. You are worth the care. You are worth the care. And so are all the lives out there. Blessed be.